Today is May the 18th, 2021. I'm Jen Widener with the Jeffersonville Township Public Library, conducting interviews for Pandemic Perspectives. Jeffersonville residents recount their lives during the 2020 COVID-19 pandemic. This project was made possible with a grant from the Indiana Genealogical Society. I'm here today with Dr. Carl Kramer and his wife, Mary Kagan Kramer. Can you all tell me a little bit about what your all's profession was or is?
Okay. Well, I'm a professional historian, educated as such. I have a doctorate in American history with a specialization in urban history. So I established what's now Kramer Associates, Inc. 40 years ago when I finished a doctorate, and there was a market that was upside down, and I had to figure out how I was going to make it in a weird situation. So I wanted to be a college history professor. So over these 40 years, I've done a combination of teaching at the University of Louisville and then at Indiana University Southeast for 35 years, and also doing the consulting work through Kentuckiana Historical Services and then Kramer Associates, Inc., beginning in 1997 when we had reorganized and incorporated.
I had had a 24-year career with the Louisville chapter of the American Red Cross. And in 97, I left there, and that's when we changed the name to Kramer Associates, Inc. and incorporated. And so that's...
Mary became the president of the firm, and I became vice president. And she handles the business side of it, and for the most part, I handle the content side.
So you guys are both lifelong residents of Jeffersonville?
I am. Well, lifelong resident of Clark County.
Okay.
I am.
And I'm not. I lived in Louisville for 15 years and then moved over here in 1987. But I had grown up in northern and western Kentucky and Kansas City and went to college up in Minnesota.
Okay. Do you all remember when you first heard about COVID-19, the coronavirus?
Well, I remember starting to hear about it, say, in the late fall, early winter of 2019, that it was happening over in China and Asia, but not a specific date or a specific incident.
Yeah, I'm not remembering exactly when either, but just that we were hearing more and more as time went on. And
right.
I remember commenting sometime along maybe the end of the year or something, well, time will tell whether this is for real or it's not for real. And neither one of us was making a prediction at that time.
In fact, we were making plans to go to attend the Rotary International Convention in Honolulu and also to do a Hawaiian cruise after the convention to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary, which was June 16th. So we actually went ahead and made reservations for that in December with our travel agent.
So that was December Louisville. 2019.
Right, December okay. 2019. So we were starting to make those plans, realizing that this was happening, but not having any sense whatsoever of how serious it would be, how long it would be, and figuring if things don't work out, we can cancel.
Well, and she was, if anything, dissuading us from going ahead and booking right then, but she assured us that there would be a cancel, that if it got bad enough, the ships would cancel, the cruise lines, and that we'd get a full refund. And of course, that's what ended up happening.
That's good. You got your money back at least.
And yeah. We got a full refund from the Rotary Convention and everything.
So did you all think it would become a problem for the United States and Indiana, or did you just think it was going to be something in other countries?
Like I said, we weren't making a prediction. And I think the cruise booking shows that we were...
You didn't think, yeah, you're just, whatever happens, happens. And
no, it wasn't that we didn't think it was going to happen, but that we knew we could get a refund.
Mm-hmm.
And that if it didn't happen, you know...
We got to go to Hawaii. And...
Mm-hmm. I would say historically, in the back of my mind, I know enough about major pandemics, movement of epidemics internationally, that something big could occur, but nothing in the magnitude of what had happened. I mean, I was aware of the Spanish flu and the cholera epidemics of the 19th century. So, but what's the idea of something that's happened of this magnitude was beyond my conception.
And I had been in Israel back in 1970, back when there was some cholera, and had been in Brazil in 2001, summer of 2001, and had to take the malaria precautions. So I had a little experience with major diseases, mm-hmm. obviously never got either one, thankfully. But we also were very much inclined to listen. Well, I mean, we've had the news on the past year a lot, and very much inclined to listen to the medical professionals.
Good. So how did your life change once the virus did reach Clark County, Indiana?
And Carl's barber was the first to die from it, and that was back in March.
Yeah, about March. Roger Eckert, the Big Four barbers up the street.
And when the word came out that the governor was going to close down the state, so to speak, Carl and I both decided he needed to hie himself to the barber shop and get a haircut.
Yeah, because we didn't know how long it was going to happen.
A day or two before the shutdown.
And we have a big event that sort of demarcates the beginning of things for us. We're both active amongst our other civic involvements in Boy Scouts of America. And the Lincoln Heritage Council, based in Louisville, has a big luncheon fundraiser every year. And you know, it's the big event over at the Galt House. And we've been table hosts for that event or some variant for 20 years or more. So then that was on the 10th of March. And we had a full house. We had a full table.
About
500 people there. There were already comments. People were doing fist bumps or elbow bumps by then rather than shaking hands. So there was a sense of apprehension, but certainly not panic at that point. But as I recall, on the way home, you know, we were hearing reports about cases starting to pop up on the coasts, and discussion of is the World Health Organization going to declare a pandemic, or those kinds of things. So that's sort of the event. That was our last major event.
That was probably the last major event in the area
that we attended. And from then on, we pretty much stayed close to home for months. Periodically, on a Sunday afternoon, we would get out and take a ride, visit state parks, the forestry, drive all around Clark County, some into Floyd County. One time or two, we got over into Harrison just to get out, but in a way that was
a safe way. Safe,
and try not to get out of the car.
Just take your Sunday drive.
Yeah, uh-huh. And traffic was very, very light at first.
Yeah, because everybody was staying at home. So my next question was, what did you all do during the stay-at-home order? But you kind of answered it, that you drove around. Did you guys do anything else to pass the time?
Well, yeah. Early on, when it looked like this was really going to set in, I ordered online, and I'm not a big one for ordering online. I ordered a ping pong set and a badminton set and a pickleball set.
So you all were going to play games no matter what was happening.
Well, we were determined to keep moving around.
Yes.
Determined to. So we have an old dining room table in the garage, which is sort of a three-season room. And we rigged up a net and had the paddles and balls. And ping pong, rigged up the badminton net outside, and it turned out the same net could suffice for pickleball. I printed up the rules for all three. And let's say that we stretched. We're a little creative.
Your house, your rules.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it did provide some exercise and getting out and moving around.
And when the weather was good, we took a lot of walks. During the spring, for a period, we got out our bicycles and rode a few times. But we also had to deal with the fact that sometime in March, I'm a cardiac patient. I have a pacemaker, and my pacemaker found an anomaly that turned out to be a form of cardiomyopathy. And, you know, I had procedures periodically through the year, and ended up in October 19th and 20th, getting a new pacemaker that continues to protect me with bradycardia, slow heartbeat, mm-hmm. but also against ventricular fibrillation. So we had to be, I had a lot of adjustments in my medication and was dealing with bouts of dizziness and lightheadedness now and then until my medication was balanced to take care of all of those things. And I had what's called a low ejection fraction, where about a quarter of the amount of blood was being pumped out as should be. So, or I guess half is what should be. I was dealing through much of the spring and into the fall with low energy.
When trying to navigate the healthcare system during a pandemic had to have been overwhelming.
Early on, we were saying one of our prime objectives was to stay healthy and stay out of doctor's offices.
That was one of my mom's, too.
And then Carl started having these daily, at least once, if not two or three times a day, dizzy spells or lightheaded spells.
We'd and have blood pressure issues.
Blood pressure. He never actually fainted, fortunately, mm-hmm. because we were being super careful. But we did not succeed in staying out of doctor's offices.
So you were actually seen in person, not virtually, like many people were seen.
We had a couple of telemed appointments. And during that period, also, both of us went in for treatment for sleep apnea. We had a couple of telemed appointments for that. But our telemed wasn't like, I'm sure, a lot of people's. And, of course, I had always had a home monitoring for my pacemaker.
Yeah.
So the last several months this year have largely been able to stay out of the doctor's offices, but so far so good on that.
That's good.
And we rigged up my laptop. He has a desktop in his office in the basement. I have a regular laptop that I keep in my office on the main floor, and then I had a little tablet that has never been real good. So early on, I put the full-size laptop in the living room. We got an extension for our USB cord, and we have done a lot of Zoom and Facebook where we hook the laptop up to the big TV,
mm-hmm.
which is stretching our computer technology. And for the better part of a year, we didn't go to any church, whereas normally we would have gone every Sunday. And we learned how to get onto Facebook to put it on the screen where we had better sound than on the laptop. And
I mean, people's homes became their churches, their medical people. I mean, yeah, our homes just became everything to us during this.
The other thing we did with Carl's heart issue, we were trying to be super careful. So he enjoys grocery shopping and normally did the vast majority of grocery shopping.
Especially big shopping.
For a year, just about a year, I did 99% of the grocery shopping. Once a week, we'd keep a running list, and I'd go up to the store, and I didn't stockpile things, but I increased our pantry a lot. If there was plenty on the shelf.
Right.
I tried not to get extra if the shelf was running low on something. But if there was an ample supply, and we put what I called an auxiliary pantry on a cabinet in the garage.
I think a lot of us did that because we didn't know what was going to happen from week to week.
When if there was enough of a certain type of meat, I'd get a little extra, freeze it. And normally we keep a pretty lean pantry and freezer. We did, had plenty on hand in case we needed it, like I say, without stockpiling.
Yeah, because we didn't know if groceries were going to shut down, if they were even be able to get stuff in, trucked in, or...
Yeah, but I tried not to get anything that was running low.
Good for you. Yeah.
And picking up on what Mary said about going to church, I particularly enjoy singing hymns. And for months, there were virtually no hymns, or when they resumed, it was the music director singing without singing by the congregation, because there was no gathering.
There was no congregation there.
Congregation, and trying to sing a hymn when you're sitting by yourself. By yourself or your family, it's not the same.
It's not the same. Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoy singing all four verses or all five verses, whatever, and maybe one or two verses is what they sing. So that was sort of frustrating. But on the other hand, there were some times like Easter a year ago, we attended, at least three Easter services. At one here at St. Mark's UCC, one from the Presbyterian headquarters across the river, and that was interesting to see how they spaced themselves, but officials from the Presbyterian Church, and then one from the big Presbyterian Church in Minneapolis, where Mary has family connections.
So you got to see a variety of different
and where we had been
congregations and churches and stuff. So you got to broaden your horizons.
Where we had been the previous Easter to the big House of Hope up in St. Paul, Minnesota, House of Hope Presbyterian. And, they pull out all the stops. And this time it was so different to see it. But also for Easter and Christmas particularly, and some in between, we have a little pump organ. And so I'll, play some hymns and he'll sing.
Aww.
So that makes it nice, too.
But it was a big deal for us this year when we returned to in-person service for the first time on Palm Sunday.
Where do you all go to church?
Well, we go to churches, First Presbyterian Church here in Jeff and St. Mark's United Church of Christ in New Albany. And that's a reflection of both of our personal histories with those denominations. Mary's father was a Presbyterian minister, and I was deeply involved in the United Church of Christ. So neither of us wanted to give up those connections. So we long ago made that arrangement of attending back and forth.
Makes sense to me.
It really has worked out well for us. We've got two church families.
And I'm sure that was nice knowing you had those families yes. during this pandemic, too, if you all needed something.
And at each church, they had a setup of checking on members. So at St. Mark's, which is far and away the bigger church, we were one of maybe 10 people who called and checked on 6 or 7 who had.
That is a fantastic idea.
So we called yes. every couple of weeks or so. And all of our people we checked on at least said they were doing okay.
To see if they needed anything yeah. or how they were feeling.
At First Pres, a lady who's pushing 90, if she hasn't hit 90, calls us every Tuesday. Every Tuesday.
It has for months.
That is so... It gives her something to do, and you all know that she's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
So
she called around noon today, gave us an update on her health. You know, we'll find out next week what the results are. You know,
it's that community that I think a lot of people were missing. Mm-hmm. Having their church community, or just a community as a whole, having people check on you, or you check on people. And
you know, one of the things, you know, we have the issue on is people who are upset because they can't go and risk their own health and other people by gathering. And, you know, our experience put us of the opinion, you know, biblically and theologically, that the church community isn't the building, it's the people themselves. And any church can do what ours did. Is it the same? No. But when I went into the hospital, the new pastor at First Pres checked on me 2 or 3 times by phone, along with the calls that I got from our pastor in mm-hmm. New Albany.
And when he went in as an outpatient to have an enhanced pacemaker and defibrillator implanted. He got there. There was a mix-up with the COVID testing.
Oh, yes.
And it turned out that since he hadn't had the test at the Louisville Hospital, it was going to take longer for the results to get in. We got a call the night before saying the results hadn't come in. Did we want to reschedule? Well, you know how you get psyched for something like this.
Oh, yeah. Especially during a pandemic. You already have a lot going on.
She said, well, there's a 50-50 chance the results will come in. We said, we'll take that chance. So we got to the hospital. The results hadn't come in. And they finally came in, I don't know, 9 o'clock or so in the morning. But by then, he'd missed the early morning rotation.
Oh, right.
It had to be late mm-hmm. afternoon. So they kept him. I had taken my cell phone, hadn't thought to take the charger because of...
You weren't going
to
be there all day.
I hadn't thought to take his toothbrush. So he stayed that night. The next morning, the doctor came in and said that they had to go back in and reposition the lead into the ventricle. So that was the second night.
And that was in the afternoon before they could get to
so
me.
So all of this during... a pandemic, plus there could be one visitor.
I was going to ask, like, how did that work? Because I know a lot of hospitals were closed down for visitors.
And this was in mid-October last year.
Okay, so yeah, things were a squoosh better in October.
One visitor, so I had to sign that I would be that person, which meant his sister, who normally would have come in from up mm-hmm. at Anderson, couldn't come down. Neither of the ministers could come in, no other family members.
So, yeah, crazy, crazy times.
Yeah.
And then when he had one of the procedures, it might have been the echocardiogram or the one of the procedures, they had a sign up that I'd have to wait out in the car. Well, that didn't appeal to me, so I just said, do I have to go out to the car to wait? And they said, let us check. And they let me wait in the conference room. A small room about like this.
That's better than sitting in your car.
Yeah, but they let me wait in there.
And I was having enough dizzy spells and so forth. And is this the one that right after the event or in either case, I was not supposed to drive
Yeah, so I had to take
She was the designated driver.
But the waiting room was closed to visitors. But, you know, just a little accommodation like that.
It means a lot.
Yeah, it was Norton downtown.
It means a lot, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So as a historian, what are some of the things that you can take away from this pandemic? Things that were that we want to remember for the future generations to remember about what has happened.
Well, first, let me respond to that in a way that's sort of transitional. One of the significant things we did when we recognized that this was going to be a major event, we got a message from the Filson Historical Society saying, you know, this is going to be a memorable event. We would like to have people's memories of the pandemic. I think that message came out in April.
I think it was in the paper. I think I saw it in the paper.
Well,
and I told Carol.
And I had seen it. She told me, but I had seen that as well. So we decided to start keeping a journal. So taking this far beyond what the Filson had in mind. So we went back consulting our memories and our calendars to the beginning of the year, wrote an introduction, and then a day-by-day accounting. And by the time we caught up with the calendar, we were writing, initially our entries were something like that, three or four or five lines. By the time we got into April, things were happening fast and furious. We had entries that would go a long paragraph and then a page. And of course, we're dealing not just with the pandemic itself, but life in the pandemic.
Yeah.
So this is when the political situation is heating up with the election coming. We wrote about what was happening on the local scene, what we were doing personally, and then the national scene. It was interesting how it worked out, because when we first started, we would gather at my computer and sort of talk about things. And some things Mary would write, some things I would write. And finally, we found it worked best if Mary kept notes during the day. And then I would take her notes and I would enter them and often elaborate on them.
Oh, yeah.
Flesh them out.
Yeah.
Flesh them out. So we didn't have to do sort of the back and forth that goes with us with it. And periodically she would check. But if there was commentary, most of that was my commentary. But it was the kind of commentary that I knew from day to day that we could agree on.
Yeah.
Or if there was something that was specific to one of us, I would say Carl said or Mary said. Mm-hmm. So I got onto that idea because during the 1937 flood, the girls at Shawnee High School in Louisville, back when it was a girls' school, wrote essays on their experiences in the flood. And as a Louisville historian, I quickly discovered that that was an important primary source.
If you wait too long, people don't remember exact details. That's why this was so important. Just do this now while we're still in the pandemic. So people can remember exact details about their lives and what was happening.
So as a historian, what do I take? It's a reminder that politics involves everything. You know, we would like to think that in the past that we got along with dealing with major public health issues without political interference. That's nonsense. The terrible toll of the 1917-18 Spanish flu, so-called, resulted in part from the fact that the Wilson administration knew that this was getting severe, but they went on and held a big bond sale in Philadelphia. And that was a super spreader. That
and there were
spread,
parades. That
and
were,
parades and all of those kinds of things that spread the epidemic literally across the country.
And there were anti-maskers then.
Right, yeah. So
a lot of this is, we should have learned from history, but.
And there is a lot of what I call one-way liberty. And I say, speaking as a historian, and you know, so as historians, we can speak with authority. There is no such thing as one-way liberty. Nobody has the right to deprive someone else of their life or liberty for the exclusive right of their own. So, you know, those are sort of lessons. But if this happens again 20, 30, or 40 years from now, will people learn from what I just said? No.
We would like to hope that they would, but as we've seen, like with the Spanish flu.
Human beings.
Yep. Do you guys have anything else you'd like to tell me about your experience? Or?
Well, we've been meeting on Zoom, Rotary Club, and normally we would have maybe 27 at a meeting. We've had in the vicinity of 15 to 18 on Zoom, some of the older regular members who normally would be every week. Just aren't comfortable on Zoom.
That's understandable. Mm-hmm. It was new technology to me even when all of this started. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine people of older generations. I mean, there's no way. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I mean, you know, we all have our limits.
We had 18 members or 18 people today, including one Louisville Rotary Club member who attends almost our meeting almost every week, whether in person or via Zoom. He's the husband of Tori Merton McClure, Mac McClure. Zooms into our meetings as regularly as he attended our meetings because he just likes to attend with us. We had 18 today, including Mac and Reverend Eric Wright, the new pastor of First Presbyterian Church.
So we're still doing Zoom.
We're still doing Zoom.
And we're doing Zoom because the Radisson, where we meet, can't hire enough servers to serve lunch. And I keep thinking there is some major disconnect here. When people are out of work, and yet these restaurants can't
get enough
open
workers
because they can't get workers. I realize it's not the best pay, but
a job's a job until you can get back to whatever the new normal is.
So those kinds of things. I'm trying to.
Well, you were thinking what we did at the beginning when it looked like this was really happening. I tried to make a conscious effort to call friends and family members who I felt might be a little disconnected. Like I have a cousin in South Carolina, my contemporary, who doesn't have a computer, doesn't have internet or email or anything, and very small family down there.
So, yeah, I mean, that phone call means a lot.
Uh-huh. Just check on.
We also have held a derby party of some kind since we've known each other. Virtually almost 40 years. And last year, of course, the Derby was postponed and it was still in the midst of the pandemic. So we didn't have a Derby party last year. And you know, we had people who we would have invited who expressed disappointment. But this year, with the vaccine being available, and since the virtual almost all the people who come are our age or older, they've been
vaccinated and probably weren't out at gatherings.
So we decided to go ahead with the party, and we started calling people, and people were just accepting left and right very eagerly, you know, glad you called. We'd love to be there. No hesitation. And the parallel of that as well was the response of those who couldn't come. It was, oh, shucks, I really, really wish we could go. We have another commitment. One of my oldest and longest and dearest friends and his wife, going back from when we were kids in Sellersburg Speed, they live in Lexington, Kentucky now, they said, wish we could go, but we have a granddaughter with a five in, I think, Rhode Island with a fifth birthday. We've got to go.
Yeah, people are starting to get out more and travel a little bit more. And
yeah, but at best, sometimes for a party like that, there'll be, golly, I hope I can come, but I've got this and this. And this time it was, from the ones who could come, an enthusiastic, immediate yes. Mm-hmm. So glad you asked.
Looking to get back to something some that's them, normal.
Yeah. Some of them said it was the first time they'd been out.
Oh, so glad y'all were able to do that. I mean, that meant a lot to those people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we had an unusual number of them who stayed and helped take down. We were
kind didn't
of
want to go home. They were happy to be out.
Really? And it was a beautiful day.
Yes, the Derby Day was gorgeous. Yes.
And some of many of those who left early probably shouldn't have stayed around to help because of their age and health. But under normal circumstances, the friends in Lexington would have been the last to leave because for helping us. And we were sort of, okay, what are we going to do with Mike and Margo not here as far as taking down? But we didn't have to worry about
everybody
that.
Everybody pitched in.
Everybody pitched in, and we were able to get everything into the garage. And there was a little enough left over that it took us a little while on Sunday to make the final change. Yeah. But nothing major.
But I've been saying it's so nice to see people other than just 2 inches high on its
street. Right, to see people in person. It was nice to shake y'all's hands today. I haven't done that in over a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
And I'm wondering how many customs might fall away. Will shaking hands become a little less common? Will more people be on, what are they calling it, hybrid meetings?
Well, we're still doing all of our staff meetings via Zoom. Even though we're all in the building, we're still sitting here at our computers.
Oh, really? And we have enough nieces and nephews who are teachers that we're hearing from them what their challenges have been.
I am hoping to get a couple of teachers to interview. I have a cousin who is an elementary school teacher in Clarksville, because that's been a huge challenge. I mean, from kindergarten through through colleges, mm-hmm. of changing things around.
And youth activities. Our nieces and nephews and their families have been hit fairly hard, especially on my side. My nephew's son was quarantined in the basement of their house. He's 17 because the girls had minor cases, but nevertheless. My sister's sons and their wives and their children, almost all of them had a COVID, again, light cases. And their stepmother, the boy's stepmother, came down from the Pendleton area for one of the girls, or one of the kids, I don't remember what it was, one of the grandsons or grandson or granddaughters. But anyway, she came down for the kids' soccer game.
To North Vernon.
And had been exposed, but was asymptomatic. And she passed it on to two or three of the grandkids.
And that was a tough thing, because you could have it and feel fine and pass it on to everybody. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know my family, we all had a plan. Like if I got it or my mom got it, like what we were going to do. I was quarantined from here once because there was an employee in my department that had asymptomatic.
But on the other hand, we have a niece. She's our nephew's ex-wife, but they're still very much an item. She's the medical director at Madison State Hospital. The last we knew, she had had one case, one staff member who had come down with it and apparently was exposed outside. But the restrictions that she implemented there kept the staff and all the residents safe otherwise.
Yeah.
So we haven't seen her or our nephew for over a year.
Over a year, right.
We did not go to a family Christmas.
I mean, many of us had to change how we did everything.
Yeah. We went to a couple other things that my brother and sister-in-law's, also here in Jeff, where they could maintain
distance
yeah. and outside.
Outside.
But Christmas couldn't do outside. And
so, any final thoughts on the pandemic you'd like to tell me?
I wish this would be an eye opener for some politicians, because I really think that the medical professionals are on top of it.
Certainly, they are here. Now, we've had, Mary at least has heard from some who, you know, how can they believe that? But you're always going to find the naysayers.
And every bunch, no matter what it is, you're always going to have those few people. Well, thank you guys for coming in today and letting me interview you about this.
You're welcome. Glad to
do it. You're welcome. Thank you.